Hello, everyone. I'm Jordan Reddick, and this is the Hawk Talk, a student podcast on the QU Media Podcast Network. And today's guest is Coach Ethan, the head men's and women's tennis coach. How you doing today?
I'm good. Doing very well today. How about yourself?
Man, I'm doing great, man. I can't complain. So let's go ahead and get started. Just give us a little rundown about your background, where you're from, and just how you got into coaching.
It is actually a long story, surprising story. I was born and raised here. I've lived here my whole life. My family lives here, grandparents, cousins, most of my family's here in town. Attended St. Peter's School here, Quincy Notre Dame, played about every sport possible growing up, football, soccer, baseball, basketball. Didn't really start picking up the racket until high school.
Okay.
And again, that's a whole long story in itself, but soccer was my main sport. Loved it. Again, just an athlete. Loved to play, get outside and play.
Yeah.
But when I got to high school, I decided to play soccer, and then, you know, that season's long and grueling. And then decided not to play basketball, take the winter off, and came up to baseball and made the decision that I'm just going to focus on soccer. That was my main thought. And then my buddy Ian Hinkamper said, hey, why don't you just play tennis? It'd be fun. You know, I play tennis. He's a very good tennis player. And I decided to say, hey, why not? Let's give it a shot. Because I did play a little bit for fun with some friends, but nothing like serious, not taking any lessons. And of course, I get into it, and I can't take it like, you know, anything else. I've got to be serious. I got to put 120% into it. I improved a lot. Got better thanks to my coaches, Monica Hinkamper, Todd Willing, who I will bring up his son later, who plays for me now.
Oh, okay, okay.
Todd is the head pro out at the Quincy Rec Club, and Monica is like the manager of the Rec Club as well, and is a pro out there. And so they've brought me a long way. And senior year of high school, it's a decision, you know, a lot of people thought I'd go play soccer here at QU. Mm-hmm. And ended up playing tennis, decided to go that route. I knew soccer would be a hard, grueling 4 years here in college, and they expect full commitment year-round. And I don't think that's what I quite wanted for my experience. I wanted a good balance of social, being able to focus on class, and you know, commitment to a sport.
Right.
And that's what Bill Latour kind of offered for me, who was my coach back at the time. And I couldn't have asked for a better coach, better 4 years. I mean, it was very nice. The experience was great. That's what I've tried now to implement myself as a coach. And it was the experience that I wanted. And, you know, every athlete wants a different experience. Some want hey, relaxed. I want a good balance and not like tennis is everything.
Right.
All day, every day. And then others want that. So that was kind of part of it.
So do you feel like you made the right decision in going the tennis route?
As far as making the right decision, yes. And especially looking at where I'm at now, definitely. You know, after the fact of the 4 years, I did look back and say, man, soccer would have been fun. It would have been fun to play that. Obviously, the team's been very good even since when I was in college. So it would have been fun to be on that team. I know it would have been. But, I believe I made the right decision. I have no regrets about it. I would have liked to, like I said, see the other side of it. But obviously, we can't do that.
So you haven't had any, like, thoughts when you was a player here, like, man, maybe I should go talk to the soccer coach because I know deep down inside. Because I kind of feel the same way about baseball. Like, to me, I love baseball, but I knew football would kind of be, like, the smarter route.
Yeah.
But I kind of sometimes wish I was like, dang, yeah. I wonder what my baseball career would have been if I would have took it a little bit more serious and kind of took those offers that I did have for baseball. So I kind of feel you on that right there. So let's talk about how you got here. So was this your first ever head coaching job here?
So no. Head coaching at the collegiate level, yes.
Okay.
So after college, I graduated with my degree in finance, minor in marketing, and, oh, what are you going to go do? I have no clue.
Right.
That's the big decision. And I started working at First Bankers Trust here in town, trust company, help mostly older people, but anyone really with investment, trust funds, stuff like that. Ended up moving over to the bank side of First Bankers, became a loan officer. Good job, liked it, liked the people I work with. The overall company direction I didn't care for as much. So not only on top of that, this job became available. And it all kind of happened around the same time. I was like thinking about leaving my last job, and then this became open, and it was like, you know, kind of hit me in the head like I should probably do this. And then at that point in time, actually, my last grandfather had fallen and broken his hip on Thanksgiving, 96 nice. Years old. And so he ended up passing away about that next January. He lived to be a little longer, but he ended up passing away. And he actually taught here at QU for 40 years.
Ooh, sheesh.
Yes, he taught chemistry here. And was a very, very inspirational guy. Also worked part-time at the hospital at the same time at Word Blessing for about 30 years, I believe. Had two master's degrees, had his PhD. He was just an intelligent man, and I didn't inherit a lot of that intelligence. I wish I had, but, I mean, he was just a very driven guy, and World War II survivor, was in the Navy. So, I mean, outstanding guy. And when he passed, he was a very, very big role model for me. Again, right around the same time this job became available. And I've never been, you know, I was raised Catholic. That's how I was brought up. Never had any of those, like, inspirational or like hits you, smack you in the face moments.
Right.
But when all this went down, it was like, this is meant to be.
Yeah.
You know? And so that is my one big, great story about, you know, again, just things happening for a reason.
Yeah.
And I do believe everything happens for a reason, good, bad, it happens for a reason. And this all happened and I took the job. And actually the funny part is I had to, I was competing with one of my best friends as well for the job.
Oh, really?
Yes. I played on the team with him here, and you know, it was fine. Either way, I knew if I got the job, he got the job, the team would be in very good hands.
Yeah.
It all worked out that way. But back to my first coaching job, actually, while I was at the bank, I did coach for Q&D High School.
Okay.
The girls team there. And I only did that 1 year, and then I think that's when this job became available, and so then I switched and everything. And but did have a good success with my girls. I think we went 10-1 on the regular season. I had 5 of my 6 girls qualify for state.
Okay.
So I had a very, very good year.
Okay,
My girls, they put in a lot of work, and they were a good team, a fun bunch too. So that was my first coaching experience for team-wise. As far as the Quincy Racquet Club goes, I've been teaching there. Now it's been probably about 11, 12 years.
Okay.
As just helping Todd and Monica with group classes. I've done private lessons, just about anything. And I've been involved in the tennis community as well for a long time. I sit on a board. We're called the Quincy Tennis Association, mm-hmm. Volunteer board. We raise funds, host the city tournament events. We run those, and we help raise money. And then we give back to, again, QU, Q&D, QHS school programs for that.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
That's kind of bundles everything in.
So I kind of got, as you was talking, I kind of thought of two questions. So I'm going to ask you both of them, and I can repeat if you forget one of them. So the first question is, you know, when you did accept the job here, what kind of prepared you to be a head coach? And then my follow-up question with that is, how does it feel to kind of be from Quincy, go here as a student, compete here as a student athlete, and then a couple years later, now it's your turn to run the show now. So how does that feel? Like, have you always felt like this was home? Did you have other options, or did other coaches, other schools start calling once they figured out? Mm-hmm. So just give us a little bit.
I'll answer the second question first. I mean, it feels great. It really does feel great to coach for the school you went to, your alma mater. It's nothing's changed in my mind. It's been great. We've had a couple coaches come in since my coach, and I know that's been the hard part, is keeping a full-time coach. And so for me to be able to step in and take care of it and now move forward, hopefully for a while, it feels really good. And as far as the transition goes, there's definitely been difficulties, and I knew that. You know, at the high school level, they pretty much handle a lot of the stuff for you, budgeting. Right. There's no recruiting involved. There's a lot of stuff you don't have to worry about. It's just like, nope, we just need you to, you know, take the kids there, coach them, coach the practice. And even I had two good parents that were like, hey, don't worry about the budget. We'll fund that ourselves. Like, right. I mean, it was great. I mean, I had no worries when I was coaching at the high school. And now here, all this is slapped on your lap. And I, you know, I've got the experience, I think, and the knowledge to take care of it. It's just, I knew the first 1-2 years.
It's going
to
be a little rough.
There's going to be a learning curve.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm going to make mistakes, but you're going to learn from those mistakes. And, and the biggest thing is just making sure you're prepared at all times and preparing way in advance, because things can change quickly. And so, no, I knew there'd be difficulties. But so far in my first 3 years now, I think things have run very well. We've gotten better every year. And this year has been definitely our best year by far.
Great. Now that you brought that up, right, let's go ahead and talk about this year, because I've been watching, and I've if I'm not mistaken, you sent people to nationals, right? Is that how that works?
We didn't make nationals, no. My women's team qualified for the GLVC tournament. And okay. So I can go through a little bit of that too, because you know, a lot of even other coaches and staff don't understand our sport, and every sport's different. I know when it comes to the right. postseason.
Go ahead. Matter of fact, go ahead. Give us a little rundown on how tennis operates, because. We have already different coaches, and I kind of like when coaches kind of explain their sport, because I tell people all the time, there's a lot of people out me like out there like me that's like, okay, well, you got a racket, mm-hmm. you got a little green ball, you hit it back and forth, but I like to know more in depth about how it works, right? Why you recruit the people that you do recruit, mm-hmm. where do you recruit?
Mm-hmm. So when it comes down to our conference, there are two halves, the East and the West. They take the top eight teams, top four from each half.
Okay.
And so this year my women finished fourth, very close to beating Rockhurst and getting that three seed. Was missing my number four player, which again I'm going to key in on, is extremely important, because I'm missing one of my top six. I mean, if it's a number five or six player, typically I got someone that can jump in,
right?
But missing a five this year was incredible. Missing a 1-2-3 or 4 or a five player just absolutely hurts you. And yeah. you can miss the mark by that much because of that. Injury, sickness, whatever it is. But so we gained the 4 seed on our half, so we play first round the 1 seed from the other half.
Okay.
And then every team is like that. So the 3 plays the 2 on our side plays the 3 from the other half, 1 plays the 4. So we got stuck playing UIndy first round, who they're nationally ranked, men and women. They're very good. They attend nationals every year and usually finish top, you know, 6 in the nation. Very good team. So that's how we would qualify for postseason. We play every team on our half, and we just got to finish top 4. I'll even go into scoring.
Please do.
Because, again, scoring is huge. And the dual matches, it's best of 7 total points, team points. So first team to 4. Doubles, we play a number 1 doubles match, a 2 doubles match, and a 3 doubles match.
Now, when you say doubles match, can you elaborate a little bit about that?
Yes. Yeah, so you play one set to 6. So my top doubles team, mm-hmm. you know, partners this year for my girls is Veta Griva and Blanca Salas Cruz. They play a doubles match against their top doubles team, mm-hmm. in 1-6. It's very quick. And then my 2 team plays a match. My 3 team plays a match.
Gotcha.
Got it. You have to take 2 out of the 3, and you gain 1 point for that.
Okay.
And they've really taken that away, the emphasis on doubles, because when I was here in school, every match was worth 1 point. So it was, you could, if you sweep doubles, you'd be up 3-0.
Right.
But the system was the best of 9. And I'll go into why it puts so much more emphasis on doubles now to take that 1 point. But singles, then you play top 6 singles. You know, my number 1 player plays against their 1, my 2 versus their 2. Right. And that's 2 out of 3 sets. And if you split sets, you play a full third.
Okay.
And with tennis, there's no time limit. There's no time limit at all. It could take a very long time. They've adjusted the scoring to where it's no ad, which means if you get to deuce or 40 all, which, or you could say individual points, 3-3, mm-hmm. basically, it's next point wins.
Right.
Where it used to be, like, if you watch professionals, they play add in, add advantage out. Right. You know, they could go on really long, but they cut that to shorten the sport because it takes so long. But, which, again, a lot of cheating happens on those points, which is unfortunate. But, but no, so they play 2 out of 3, and then you can play the full third. But again, I've got matches that, you know, two sets long. My player wins 6-4, 6-4, and it lasts 2.5 hours. I've known three-set matches to last 2.5 hours. I've known, you know, 6-4, 6-4 match to go 3 hours. I mean, it's, you just never know how long it's going to take. Points can take longer. So that's kind of how that works, and every singles match is worth 1 point, basically. So if you take that doubles point, you got to take three singles. You would win by gaining the 4 points.
Right.
That makes sense?
Yeah.
Now, typically, we always play all the way out. Now at the conference tournament, once a team hits 4 points, they abandon the remaining matches, pull you off the court.
Okay.
Gotcha. Which I get it, I guess. They're saving time, saving energy, preventing injury for the players because the conference tournament goes 3 straight days. Uh-huh. But it just, it's really hard for seniors to end that way.
Yeah.
And that's how I ended. Like, we played our doubles match. Me and my buddy almost won at one dubs, and then I was playing my three singles match, and, you know, I lost first set, I think 6-2. Second set was 3-3 in the second set, and they clinched it, and then it's like, ah, we got to stop.
So does tennis kind of – is it, like, track a little bit to where, like, it's a team sport, but
yes,
it can also be an individual type thing as well? Or is it more leaning towards being a team sport?
For our sport, it is team. Virtually, it's really a team sport. For us to move on to nationals, we have to win as a team. We can't.
Right.
I mean, if my number one wins every time, but the rest of them don't, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
At the end of the day, you got to win 4 points to advance, and so it is a team sport. You're individually playing your singles match, but that's 1 point for your team.
Gotcha.
So it really is a team sport. The only time really we have individual stuff is like for tournaments. Like I host a men's home tournament, a women's home tournament in the fall, and then we attend the Midwest Regional ITA tournament. That's more individual. You get put into a draw with the best players from your region, and you go. It's just a straight-up tournament. And, you know, they have national rankings for individual players as well as teams. They do have that ranking. But other than the ITA, like, regional tournaments, I mean, again, you could advance further as an individual there. But as far as us, attending nationals, we got to win as a team.
Yep. Gotcha. I mean, and that kind of makes it, does that make it a little bit more easier when you are building a tennis team to kind of get those players who understand the idea of, yeah, right, you may have your individual accolades, but at the end of the day, right, we all need each other to succeed and move forward to the ultimate goal, which is a national championship.
Correct. It is something that when I am recruiting, I look at. I have brought in some players this year that have never played in a team format.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be honest, I've recruited mostly international these last couple of years.
Why is that?
I don't want to say that. I'll just basically say the best tennis players in the world right now are from Europe.
I mean, that's understandable.
If you look at the professional level, it's the same thing. Whatever they're doing to bring their kids up, and there's a lot of very good American tennis players. Don't get me wrong. I mean, a lot of the teams we play have some very strong American players. But whatever Europe's doing right now, they're breeding some very good talent, and you see it at the professional tour too. Although Americans are starting to do much better, they're getting better and better every year. But it's just nice to have, though. It's not only from that point of view too. It is fun to have players from different parts of the country, because you get to learn a lot about their culture and how they are or how they see things. And then they've actually taught me a lot as far as tennis goes too. Like, hey, this is stuff my coach back home did with me. And it's just nice to see all that. I've got players from all over the world. Spain, my number one for the girls team, she's from Greece. I have a couple Italians. I've got one from Colombia, Bogota.
Do you ever run into, like, a language barrier?
For me, no. Typically, like, if they first come in, I've, like, a couple kids that have come in these last 2 years as freshmen, they've struggled a little bit with what they want to say or maybe understanding. And I've got, like I said, my grad assistant, Daniel, he speaks Spanish.
Gotcha.
So he's pretty good to be able to speak with them. And then, like, same situation with, like, Italians. I mean, a lot of the language is similar. So they can somewhat pick up words. But, I mean, after about a semester, once they're around a lot more English, they really start to learn better. And they do have to take an English test in order to be accepted to school. So
gotcha.
They have to have some base of English, because if they don't, they're definitely not going to pass their classes.
Right.
I mean, that's another thing, too. So a little bit, but really I haven't had any issue with that.
So how do you, as a coach, how do you kind of, because I know even from us when we're coaching and we're recruiting, right, we get players from 5 minutes away, 3 hours away, 10 hours away. So how do you kind of handle as a coach the homesickness for your team, especially with them being thousands of miles away right. sometimes?
I know a lot of them do get homesick at times. I don't think what we try to do is, I mean, we have team dinners. Mm-hmm. We actually had a team dinner where it's like, hey, bring a dish from your back home. Like, you can make a dish from your hometown
right.
and bring it. But no, I think the team itself, I try to recruit, not based on talent too, but just you try to recruit good individuals too that are just, you know, caring, and they want to support their teammates off the court as well. Of course, you're not always going to get that with everybody. You can only get so much of a read on a recruit when you're right. talking to them over the phone or over the, you know, FaceTime. But it's really what I want is good hardworking kids is what I look for. You know, you could be the most talented individual, but I tell those recruits, you know, ahead of time, like, you can come in and be the most talented person, but if you're not a good teammate and supportive and respectful, you're not going to play for me.
Right.
You know, that's what I try to emphasize at the end of the day. And I'm not saying you have to be best friends with everybody on the team, because again, you've got 10 girls and 10 boys, and you got so many different personalities. Like,
yeah.
you're bound to have a little clash here and there, but there's no reason why you can't respect your teammates, because you're working for the same goal.
Right.
And if they don't win, you don't win.
Right.
So that's about the best way I can put that.
So let's talk about the team. Who are some of your key players? Who came in as a freshman this year that kind of stepped up and you was like, oh, okay, like, yeah. you got it, you got it.
I had an incredible freshman this year come in for my girls. Actually, I had three freshmen come in, and I had a transfer, an NBA, for my girls, and all of them made an immediate impact. My transfer came from Grand Valley State. Her name's Veta Griva. She's from Greece. Played number one there all 4 years. Very high-level player. I knew she'd come in and play number one easily. She had an amazing year. ITA regional, she won her first four rounds, ended up playing at the quarterfinals, lost to Jury's number one, who ended up winning the whole tournament. She ended up being player of the year, too. I mean, this girl she lost to, just very good player. But Veta had a very nice run at the ITA, best run at the ITA tournament for either sport or either gender since I've been here. Again, had an incredible year. She beat some very good players. She had probably about a 10-5 record. Lost a few. And the few she lost, she was either a sick and still played, or half hurting, or, you know, she's lost a toenail twice this year.
Jesus.
Played through it. Like, yeah. She's one that doesn't like to sit out. And even if she's, you know, half injured or sick, she wants to go out there and play, and she knows, and she's still going to be out there and capable of winning, which yeah. is what the amazing thing is. Her drive is really awesome. She was all around great player this year, and she played one doubles as well with my sophomore Blanca, who I told you about. Blanca's from Spain. She is very unique women's player. She has a lot of shot making ability. Mm-hmm. That I don't see as much. Those two at the number one doubles played, I mean, just they were incredible. I mean, beat a lot of very good teams again. At the conference tournament, they were up 4-3 on Indy's number one team serving. They had just broke them, which means, like, when you break serve, it means, like, you won the game that they were serving.
Right.
So, like, you broke their serve. So when you get a break, as long as you hold the rest of the set, you're going to win that set.
Gotcha.
So they were up 4-3 when they were changing sides, and then my 2 and 3 dubs had just, like, lost, so then they pulled them off the court. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I think they were going to win that match. It just shows the caliber of tennis they're capable of playing. They didn't get beat badly all year. If they lost, it was like a 6. It was close. It was very close. But they also beat a lot of very, very good teams. Southeastern Oklahoma State beat their one team, Southeastern Oklahoma State, actually, our overall team won against them. They had a win in their conference tournament, and they're advancing to regionals. And so that's a big match I'm going to key in on that my girls won. And once they won that match, that was like, you know, they just got into their groove finally. Right. They needed a good win. And actually, they'd won another match. They played at JUCO, Weatherford. That was their first win of the spring. They lost their first four straight matches. And all close, good matches, but it's like the team dynamic wasn't quite there yet, and the support wasn't there. But then once they hit spring break, they got that win against a JUCO. I think it was 6-3, or no, sorry, I think it was 5-2 overall they won. I think it was 5-2. But after that, it's like they were in sync, and then they came out and played Southeastern Oklahoma State, again, who was a very high-level team. They always are every year, usually ranked. And they ended up winning that match. And let's see, I'm trying to think. We took the Dubs point. We took 5 and 6 singles. It came down to my freshman. So, again, this is the freshman that has just shocked me all year. And I'll tell you, I mean, no offense to her, and she knows it, but she's like 5 feet tall. Mm-hmm. And she's not a very big girl, but she hits the crap out of the ball.
Got a lot of power.
Yes, yeah, she's very, very fun to watch. She's energetic. She moves well. And she ended up losing the first set against this girl at 4. And she normally plays 5. I was missing my 2 and that was a big to-do. I was missing my number 2, and we still beat this very strong team. And my number 1, who's very consistent at winning at 1, she had lost her singles match, which was like just, you know, typically that kind of stuff. You're like, oh, man, it's going to be tough to win now today because of those instances. But the team battled very well and picked everybody up and came down to her. She lost first set. It was like 7-5, I think she lost in the first. Mm-hmm. And she won the second and third. I think it was 6-1, 6-2, but every game was tight, and there were several of those deuce points. So even though the score looked like 6-1, 6-2, oh, she ran away with that easily. She came back and beat the crap out of this girl. Well, no, it's like every single game was close because you get to deuce, and it's like next point wins. Well, you know, Mar stepped up big. Her name's Mar Sarda Marti. She's from Spain. By the way, but she stepped up big and won a lot of those deuce points. And then, you know, the next game you start back over 0-0. I mean, that's the beauty of tennis is like you can lose a game, you can lose a set, but at the end of the day, you still got to win that next set.
Yeah.
You know, to win the match. So it's never over and there's never a time limit to it. So like, again, that's the beauty where basketball, you get down, you know, 25 to 60, like you only got so much time you can climb back. Whereas this sport, you can, you're never out of it. You could save 5 match points and come back and win the match. So she came back, won 6-1, 6-2, and she was absolutely pumped. And the whole team ran out and greeted her. It was just cool because at the end of the match, when it's 3-3, you know, our team's lined up on one half. You have to be a half court away.
Right.
And then the other team's lined up on their girls' half. And then every time they switch sides, both teams switch sides, and they're just cheering everybody on. And that's the beauty of the team aspect where you don't get if you're – a lot of my players are back home playing tournaments individually. You don't have that support.
You don't have all that.
Whereas now it's like the whole team's watching. And I know that adds a little pressure too probably. But, I mean, to come up big with a win like that and then to have the whole team, you know, storm the court, it's a good feeling. It's a good feeling as a coach, and I can only imagine what it's like as a player. She came up big on that one. And same thing, Lewis. So that's another match. Mar came down to her 3-3. She won that one in straight sets, but again, very long points, closer than what the score was. I think it was 6-2, 6-2, or 6-3, 6-2, but again, very tight match. And again, you could see the pressure. And actually, Marv was not feeling well that match. She said she was pretty dizzy the first set and was seeing like three balls. And I was just trying to like, Keep her composed, exactly, and keep her in the match. Say, hey, just do what you can. You know, don't overdo it. Just, you know, if worst case, make the girl beat you.
Yeah.
You know, and if you fall, I'll come pick you up off the court. And trainer was there too and was, you know, diagnosing her, make sure everything was good. And she was. She just had some low blood sugar. And she ended up winning that match. And same scenario, you know, team stormed the court. And this is the first time we beat Lewis since 2008. I think the women's, first time since 2008. And I went all the way back on our records from what I could see, and I went on Lewis's page too, and nothing. I mean, they went back to, I think, 03 or 02, and we still hadn't beaten them.
Jeez.
I mean, it was the first time, second time in probably about 20 years we've beat Lewis.
I mean,
which is a very
that's a big accomplishment, right?
Yeah,
now. Especially how it happened.
Oh, I know. Yeah, exactly. It was cool to see, and it was tight the whole way. And that match inside the racquet club, we had to play indoors. We only have the four courts, but I played the women's match first. I think that started at two, and the women's match didn't finish till like 6:30. That was 4.5 hours for them.
Yeah.
And then the men went on, and they went until 10 o'clock, I think, 10:30. So that makes for a long day.
Yeah.
You know, I wish we had more indoor courts, but unfortunately we got what we got. But we're lucky to have that, too. We're very grateful to have the four indoor courts. But, no, that was a huge victory. And, again, it came down to Mara, and she pulled through as a freshman. That's a lot of pressure a lot to handle.
So, I mean, you speak – very highly of the women's right now. I mean, so.
Yes, and I'll get to the men too. Don't worry. I'm not leaving them out. I'm starting with highlights, and then we're going to move back to the men too, and because they had a very good year too.
Then, well, let's go ahead and talk about the men then.
Let's
go ahead and talk about them.
As far as the men go, and I say, I don't know if you want to hear my whole top six actually for my women's team. I could go through that.
Sure.
We want to do that? Okay. Yeah. So, you know, Veta played one, like I said. Two was Steffi Lau. She's not local. She's from Chicago. Family's originally from the Philippines. Very nice family. My three is Blanca Salas Cruz. Plays doubles with Veta at one. My four is Mahi Panchal. Mm-hmm. She's from India, freshman.
Okay.
Very nice player again. She plays two doubles with the freshman Mar. And then my five is Mar. And then my six is Ketrin Ismailova. She is originally Russian,
okay,
but she's lived in Spain for about 5 or 6 years. She moved to Spain, and she's been there since. And so that's kind of my top six. And Kat actually plays doubles with Anna Matino. She's from Spain, a freshman as well. They play three doubles together. We have a very good core and very good young core group that's going to grow together, because I'm really only losing Veta in my top six, and I'm hoping to replace her at the one spot. I got two or three recruits I'm looking at right now, and I'm hoping I can get a new number one, because then everyone's coming back.
Yeah,
which would be huge. Let's move on to the men. The men had a very good season, and I'll go through my top lineup too for them to start, and where they're from. My number one this year and two, and I kind of flip-flopped my one and two this year. But clearly, I think the best player this year for me was Samuele Contestabile. He was one of the guys that won the Hawk Award, and he won all GLVC player of the year.
Congratulations to him.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, he's earned it. Veta won the all-conference GLVC as well. But he's from Italy. He's a graduate student now. It's his fifth year. Again, super hard worker. Couldn't ask for a better player. Very talented. Had a great year. Beat some very, very high level and even a couple top ranked guys. My two, Zach Willing. Brought up his dad earlier. He's from Quincy here. Attended Quincy Senior High. He's had an interesting story. He's got a very interesting story too, and he'd be a good one to bring in here. Actually, talk to about it, because. He had surgery when he was young, when he was born, like after he was born, on his skull, and they had a lot of very big concerns, and everything worked out good, and he's grown up to play some very good tennis. I've known him since he was, you know, this big, and I've tried to do. He's just outstanding kid. Can't say more good things about him. And I've tried to play with him as much as I can too, and I know everybody in the community has pushed him as hard as we can, and he's grown up to a very, very good person and an incredible tennis player. This year he's really stood out and really stepped up big. So he was playing, I think, anywhere from 5 to 7 last year, and this year I've had him at the 1-2 spot.
That's amazing.
He plays one doubles. He's probably my best doubles player. He's an incredible doubles player. So he plays one doubles. Sam plays two doubles. At the three spot, I have Brendan Everhart from Texas. He's a fifth year as well. Again, another just extremely hardworking individual on and off the court. Puts in a lot of extra time. Can't say enough good things about him either. He might be the first one to go on the court, but he'd always be the last one, win or lose. I mean, he was out there battling for as long as it took. My four... Ettore Pavesi. He's from Italy. Okay. Lefty. Plays one doubles with Zach. He was actually my first recruit ever as a coach. And he has formed into an incredibly great tennis player. Was good coming in, but he's another one that's put in so much work outside of the court in the off season. From freshman year, sophomore year, I think he put on about 30 pounds of muscle. Just came back a much stronger, yeah. and he worked on his game too, and he's come back a much stronger player. Had a rough year in singles this year, and a lot of it's, I think, been in his head. A lot of it's been mental, and he'll even say that. He performs well on the practice court, but just closing out some matches has been a problem this year, and I think it's just been a lot of it's been mental. My number five, Sebastian Gomez. He's from Peru. Another extremely good doubles player. Very talented singles player. I mean, he could hit a winner anywhere in the court if he wanted to. He just kind of reminds me of have you ever watched Nick Kyrgios?
Oh, not familiar.
Check him out. He's like a superstar on the tennis court. Like, he just comes up with some just incredible shots. He's very nonchalant, very, very flashy player, but mm-hmm. he's fun to watch. He's very entertaining. But Sebastian's, again, very good player, works hard. And then my six is Pablo Mateos Niella. He's from Spain. He's this spring he'd have been first semester sophomore.
Gotcha.
Again, very, very hardworking kid. He will never give up. He's got so much energy. Actually has a bigger backhand than his forehand. It's pretty unique. But that's kind of my top six. Again, all hardworking players. This year, record-wise, was not – like, if you looked at us on paper and record-wise, you're like, oh, they didn't have a very good year. I think we were 3-11, I think. But I went back and looked after the season and noticed that four matches were decided by 1 point where we lost 3-4.
Dang.
And it came down to the final match. So, you know, Lewis, my men lost 4-3. Rockhurst at the end was 4-3. William Jewell was 4-3. And there were a couple others I can't think of off the top of my head. Missouri Valley in the fall was another one. And then we played Eastern Illinois' first match of the spring. We lost 4-1. However, my number six, we ended up having to play to clinch, which again means once a team hits four, you pull them off. And the plan was to play it all the way out. But I will tell you why we had to stop. But my number one, Sam, was 2-2 in the third, and I had a feeling he was going to win that. He lost the first, came back, won the second, had his guy just, like, completely upset, mad. There was a little jawing between the two. It got a little personal for sure, which happens in tennis too.
Really?
Yes, it can get very, very mouthy because I'll get into that as well. But my number six was going to win. I know he'd won the first, was up in the second. So I knew those two were going to win. But my number four, Ettore, ended up losing his match. It was a third set. And his kid cheated towards the end of the third, which is just unfortunate. Again, we don't have officials in every court, and a lot of times we don't have any officials, really? Which is another thing about tennis people don't understand is you call your own balls. Like, you call your sides. Like, if ball's in or out, you call it. It's not. And, you know, you can sit there and argue, and I can sit there. I can be standing right in front of them, and they could call a ball this far, you know, a half a foot inside the line out, and there'd be nothing I could do about it.
But does that affect the game?
Oh, it does. It does. Like I said, on those deuce points where his next point wins,
yeah.
A lot of cheating happens on those points. And honestly, it comes down to the coaches to make sure their players aren't cheating, because I can overturn my players. Like, if I see my player make a bad blatant bad call, I say, nope, that's their point. You know, that was a bad call. Or if they do something against the rules and you got to enforce a point penalty, say my player chucks his racket on the court, like, that's a point penalty. Like, I can give my player a point penalty, which means you just give them your opponent a free point. So really it comes down to the coaches. Now, when it comes to conference time, we try to get officials. You're supposed to have an official. But they are scarce. They are tough to get. A lot of them have gone – there's a shortage, and a lot of them go D1 because they get paid better,
right.
Which makes sense. And so, like, this year I couldn't get any officials. I send, you know, 100 emails, and I don't get responses from most of them. And then a lot of them say, I'm waiting on a schedule or I'm already booked. And it's tough, especially to get them to come to Quincy.
Right.
It's one thing if you're in Indy or in, you know, St. Louis area where there's a lot of them, but to get them to travel to Quincy, like, why, when they could stay where they're at? So, yeah, no, a lot of cheating happens on that on those points. And anyways, this kid was cheating him, and match point, the kid rips a winner on Ettore, and which means, you know, winner, like, they don't, my player doesn't even touch the ball. Like, right. Just straight out winner. And he falls and actually fractures his ankle. But that was on match point, so he won the match. Like, uh-huh. If he'd have missed that shot, like, he would have had to retire, and my player would have won. Now, you know, I obviously wish the kid a good recovery. He's a good player, and I think it came down to the whole incident with the cheating came down to he thought my kid cheated him, and so then he was going to get one back. On, you know, it just starts to become a
back and forth
thing, and that's where, again, the coaches have to be on their players and control them. You know, there have been coaches I've run across that don't care about it, and they honestly probably support it, which is, again, sad. But a lot of the schools in our conference, I think, do a pretty good job, and they're still on top of their players. And you know, I let my players know if I see you blatantly cheat, I'm pulling you from the lineup. It's just, yeah. There's no need for it.
I mean, you holding up the integrity of the game.
Right. That's what it comes down to, yeah. At the end of the day. You know, I tell them, look, you beat them fair and square, you don't beat them at all. Like, it's just not worth it to do that. And
yeah.
So, that's what we try to do. Unfortunately, there is cheating that goes on in this game, and there's not a lot I can do about it except for keep my kids in check. And then again, like I tell them, you see cheating, I grab the coach, we come stand on the court together and make calls. You know, if we can overturn calls together, then, and that's what we try to do. We just do the best we can.
Yeah. I mean, you're definitely putting us up on a lot of game right now, because I'm kind of over here like lost, because I didn't expect that. I didn't know, like, you guys go through this much adversity. Mm-hmm. Right, with the refs, like you said, the cheating,
yep.
Some coaches not holding up their end of the bargain.
Yep.
And it kind of just, I can see why some games go longer than others.
Yeah, and then we get, even the coaches, I've gotten in a couple heated battles with one or two of them this year that just get, you know, they get extremely upset and want me to do something about it. And, you know, it's one thing if I'm standing on the court and I see it, but when I'm on the other side, they want me to do something about it. It's like, look, I'll stand here and watch from here on out. But, like, I'm not going to overturn one of my players when I don't see it.
Right.
It's not fair to my player. Like, I don't trust my player. Like, that wouldn't look good on me.
Right.
You know, I trust my players. And I said, not saying I don't trust you, coach, but, look, I'll come over here and watch. And
right. Especially how you just explained how you handle things, and you already said, like, if you catch your own players cheating, like, you're out of here.
Yeah.
Because there's no room in this game for that at all. So – let's talk about the mindset going into next year, right? Girls finish off strong. Mm-hmm. So what do you think from the girls team, what is going to get them over that hump and to kind of seal that deal for a conference mm-hmm. championship, then a national championship? And then on the men's side, like, what is the mindset right now? Like, how can we turn this around? How can we start going into the direction of the women's?
So on the women's side, like I said, I'm bringing back my number 2 through 7. So my hope is I can sign here in the next month to be able to sign a number 1 girl to take that spot, and then maybe grab a number, 8 player that's another good backup for my team. And really the biggest thing for my girls now is, you know, we just had actual player meetings this week, one-on-ones, just kind of like exit interviews to say, hey, how do you think the year went for you? What would you like to see implemented in practice more? What would you like? What would you dislike? And then I talked to them what I saw this year and what I need them to improve on. And again, a lot of my young players, you know, on the women's side, they're younger. So they saw a lot this year, especially my freshmen saw a lot from the top teams like Indy and Drury. They saw how they play, just for example, in doubles, like how aggressive they are and how tight they're up on top of the net. It's just stuff like that. You know, some of the international kids don't play as much doubles growing up, mm-hmm. and so they're not as used to that side of things. So that's just one thing that they need to work on. And then I make notes and I send it to them, and then I'm asking them to read this book called The Inner Game of Tennis. It's all about the mental aspect of the game too. And I'm giving them homework. Actually, I'm probably, I don't know if I'm the only coach that gives homework, but I'm making them write 2 pages on the book, so I know they read it.
I love it.
It's just like I think it's an important thing. One of my boys, like Brandon Everhart, he had that book everywhere he went. I saw it on the court, and he read that. And I'll tell you, his game the last 2 years he's battled very well and been in tight matches, but this year he's winning a lot more, and his composure's a lot better. And so I talked to the players about keeping themselves composed, and then. But really, the work's gonna the way we're gonna win, you know, is busting our butts in the offseason. That's how we're going
right.
to win. I mean, it's not sit the racket down for 2 months, pick it up for a month just to prepare for school. Because at that point in time, what you've gained over these, you know, last 3-4 months, mm-hmm. you will lose in those 2 months sitting out.
Right.
And so I said, that does you no good. I said, we need to improve. And they saw how well we did this year and how well we competed. And I think that's going to be a big motivating factor for a lot of my players, knowing that, man, we're bringing everybody back and coach is going to get a good player for the one. And, you know, we're going to have a good opportunity. And we played Indy this year. And really, I mean, a lot of tight matches. I mean, yeah. a lot of tight matches. I could tell Indy was a little, I don't say shocked, but, like, they didn't expect it to be as tight as it was. Even though they beat us 4-0 on the scoreboard, I mean, they had to play. Yeah, they had to perform.
They had to fight for that.
They had to perform. And my number two actually had won the first, actually split set. She was up 3-2 in the third set, and I think my two was going to win that match, and no doubt about it. Which we had an official for that match. And the funny part is, this official made the worst call I've ever seen. She overturned my girl. I mean, the ball was a half a foot out. Her opponent was shocked, absolutely shocked that she overturned that ball.
Wow.
And, I mean, even when you have officials, sometimes they're not the greatest. And it just unfortunate. And I went up to her and gave her my 2 cents. Like, hey, I mean, everybody in this bubble saw that ball was a half a foot out. Like, what? And she's like, I just saw the ball in. And I'm like, okay, well, it was out. But it was a huge point because it was a deuce point.
Yeah.
So my girl lost that game. My girl was up a break, was about to go up, I think it was 4-1, and now it's 3-2 instead,
yeah.
which is a whole different scenario. But anyways, I thought she was going to win that match, and they were very competitive with Indy and a lot of the schools, even the good schools like SBU. We lost 5-2. It came down. We were down 2-3. It came down to my 4 and my 6, and my 4 lost in a third. My 6 lost, I think it was 2-4. I mean, it was couldn't have been tighter. And SBU has just blown us apart the last 2 years. So that was, I mean, just to see how much closer we are with these good teams, and we've beat a couple of very good teams this year, I think is going to be the biggest motivator. And I've reminded them of that and let them know, hey, like, where we're going to beat these good teams and consistently beat them is going to come from your work in the offseason.
Right.
You know, I can't be there. And I can text you every day. I can text you every other day. But I said, you've got to be committed to doing it and working your tail off and come back stronger for your team.
Yeah, and it will show if you actually worked or not in that offseason.
Yep.
It will show. Within the first couple matches, it's going to show.
Exactly. And there, you know, I know there's a couple that didn't do as much in this last offseason, and it definitely showed. And I think they realized it, too, when it came down to match performance. They were playing well but not quite winning a lot of matches, and it just showed it. You know, you lose this, too, the head, the mental side. That's where tennis is just not just, you know, physical training. It's also mental training constantly to be able to perform and execute under pressure. Now on the men's side, I am losing quite a few boys. I'm bringing back 4. Zach will be a senior. Ettore will be a senior. Pablo will still be a second semester sophomore. And then Sebastian Gomez is going to be a graduate student. He's going to do his MBA and play his 5th year. My plan, Sebastian's going to come back and play doubles only, though. He's going to focus on doubles.
Okay.
That's definitely a specialty. He's a good singles player, too. And if I need him to jump in, he can jump in and play. Sebastian's going to come back and play doubles, and he's good with that. He likes doubles, and he performs at a very high level in doubles. Zach and Ettore play doubles together. They've played one all year. They're coming back. This will be the third straight year playing with each other. So they've built a lot of chemistry together, and they've beat some very good teams this year as well. Eastern's won. They beat, I can tell you, Lewis has won, I believe. They beat Lewis has won. I mean, a lot of good teams in the conference. They have played very well. So that's comforting knowing they'll be playing a third year together. Right now I've got one kid committed from Quincy. His name is Marco Chuchu. His dad, Ilya, over at Tiramisu. Very nice family. He's a good, hardworking player. I see him right now kind of right outside the top 6. It's going to be a huge adjustment playing for QND. He doesn't get the push that he needs right now,
right.
And he will get that once he gets here, and he understands that. It's going to take him a year to adjust, but he's going to be a very valuable asset down the road. He's tall, lanky, be a very good doubles player, got a big serve, got good hands at the net. I mean, he'll be a good singles player too. I have no doubt in my mind if he continues to work the way he is now, and progressing the way he is, he'll be a very strong player for me down the road. As of now, I've got 3 verbal commits. 2 are transfers from JUCO, one's an incoming freshman from Spain. I'm really hoping I can sign all of them. If I do, the one player from the freshman will play number one.
Okay.
On paper, about people I've talked to that know him, I mean, they say he's an incredibly high-level player. So I'm very excited to have him, as long as everything goes well and he gets accepted and everything's good. So we hope that'll work well. And the transfers are 2 very good players too, very high level. On paper, everyone's like the transfers are a whole step up from players that are leaving. My freshman that's coming in is definitely a step and a half up from everybody. Again, he could come here and it could be a different story, but from all the research I've done, he looks very, very good. So yeah,
the ceiling's very high.
Right. So I'm very confident with the boys next year. We're going to have a very, very solid and very deep team as well. And the players that are returning know that. They know that I keep talking to them. You know, obviously don't give away private information, but I keep talking, look, all these boys want to come. They're very high level. I can give them, you know, hey, this is their UTR, which if you don't know, is your universal tennis rating.
Okay, gotcha.
And all the everybody from the number one player in the world professional-wise has one all the way down to anybody that signs up and starts playing the events. So that's how I can kind of gauge it. Like, hey, these two boys that want to come here, they're this UTR. Just to give them an idea like, oh, hey, that's good. That way, you know, I can try to motivate them to say, hey, I got a couple good boys coming in. And the freshman's like, he's an 11 UTR. He's good. He'll be good. And yeah, they know that. They're like, oh, yeah, that'll be really good. So just to try to motivate them a little bit. But, no, I'm very excited on the boys' side. Like I said, I think we'll have a lot of new players. And not saying anything was wrong with, you know, my current players. They're great, great, hardworking players, and they were that close. I mean, they take down William Jewell. We're at the conference tournament playing Indy first round. And, I mean, it came down again to the very last match. So they were right there. Could have gained a 3 seed as well if they had took down Rockhurst and William Jewell. Could have gained the 3 seed. I mean, we were right there. I mean, it was, you're talking about one match on both matches. So – but no, I'm very excited to see what next year brings. This is my, you know, 3rd year as a coach, and for my women's team, I brought on quite a, you know, 4 new players, and it's going to be very similar on the boys' side. And I think, just getting some new change and new blood and a different aspect. And I don't know if you know, a lot of my players when I came in here had gone through 3 to 4 coaches in 3 years.
I did not know that, actually.
So, you know, that's another, like, aspect to it that just has been tough, I think, on the players. And it's been tough to, I'll say, manage them, but just, you know, get them to believe and trust in the process of what I want and what I'm pushing. It's just been a tough situation, you know, for any player would have to go through several coaches and then hear one thing from one thing from another, and then you know, their last coach kind of just bailed halfway through, like in December, and left. And so that was just, I think that was all a lot of tough situations psychologically, to come back and then continue playing. And it's been tough, but everyone's grown a lot, and they would, any of them, you ask them, like, this has been the, you know, since I've been here, we've improved, and this year was the best year for sure. And we had the opportunity and just missed it.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's amazing, Coach. I mean, love the direction that you're going in. I love how you care for your players. I love how you hold your players accountable. I love the idea of tennis. And now that you help me understand a lot more now when I watch tennis now, I can be like, okay, this is what he was talking about. Okay, now I understand how the scoring works and everything like that. So last thing, so where can everybody find you guys or you on social media?
So we have our 2 social media accounts, Instagram and Facebook. I believe it is QUMW Tennis, I think is the username. I'll double check and look. I can definitely get you that information. But we're on the social media pages. I had a huge fundraising project this year. We've got 4 Mevo cameras now inside at the Racquet Club, mm-hmm. where we can stream and record.
We're
able to stream a couple matches this year. I'm still working on some of the bugs of working out the streaming right now. I had to do one screen with four, like a split screen with four different screens in one, but I'm working on different software with IT to try to get four separate links. But I think that's going to be really, really beneficial for me, for my players to rewatch their video, and then just for a recruiting standpoint, I think it'll be good too. But I've got a Twitch page as well. It's Coach Arns is on Twitch. Where we'll be streaming matches in the future. And then my goal is to hopefully get some sort of streaming, if not streaming, recording up at the Reservoir Park, where's where all of our matches are played. I think that'd be a huge thing to have, again, just so, you know, we get all international players and even the players from America, you know, not many parents are driving or flying to come see us every match, and so they'd have the opportunity to watch their kids play. And and I think it'd be huge. But, no, we anytime, our schedule's always up on the website, and we love to have more support out at the park. I mean, especially like days like today.
It's yeah, it's a beautiful day.
Perfect day to come out and watch tennis. So
yes, sir. So thank you again, Coach. Again, wish you nothing but much success going into next year. Your women's team sound like they're right there. Men's team sound like they're right there, just got to finish, right?
Yep.
Especially on the mental side. I'm glad you actually got your kids reading books, doing homework. I mean, it shows how much you actually truly care about your team and your athletes.
Yep.
So thank you. Continue that. Thank you, everyone, for listening. This is the Hawk Talk. I'm your host, Jordan Reddick, and this has been a production of the QU Media Podcast.